I'm good. So, Ratna Vandana asked me to talk about positive emotion in the context of our system of practice. And my title is Luminous Love. So we're just going to check. Okay. I'm here. Yes, I can say that I'm just happily waiting to start giving my talk.
Do you want to use this one instead? This one's working.
Yeah, okay. So I will start again. So Ratna Vandana asked me to talk about positive emotion in the context of our system of practice. And my title is Luminous Love. A message from Urgyen Sangha Ratchita to all members of the Tri Ratna Buddhist Order. And of course, I urge you all to apply this system fully and deeply to yourselves. The karmic work on integration and developing positive emotion, and more especially the explicitly dharmic work of spiritual receptivity, death, and rebirth. If each of us does work diligently on ourselves in this way, then everything else will follow. So that's Bhante's introduction to an initiation into a new life. And I have a heart response to this. This is Bhante, my teacher, our teacher. It's one of the later teachings in his life. It's passed on through Subhuti. And it's pragmatic, radical, and visionary. And the whole paper, which Subhuti has presented for us, is, well, it's immediate. It's for us here and now. But it's also seeing beyond. So this is for future generations. And this may be a seeing beyond that. This is reaching out of this world. So something shines very brightly. And our focus this weekend, positive emotion, is primary. It's integral to all of this. So for us too, as we engage with this, well, it's about our ordinary living. It's about our rain-sodden world. But it's also about aspiration, vision, reaching beyond. We have our feet on the ground, our boots are muddy, and we look up to the stars. So coming on to what is often now called the latest paper, Initiation into a New Life, this is about all our spiritual potential. It's about initiation. It has a specific focus on the ordination ceremony, though that is not my focus today. But more generally, it's about moving into new creative ways of being. And it's presented as a system of practice. And I think we're all becoming familiar with it, and we're making it our own. And Ratnadharani, on the December National Order Weekend, you gave a very full explanation of this paper, a very comprehensive explanation, and also had a very helpful diagram to go with it. So I'm just going to summarise those points much, much, much more briefly. So this is a summary, a reminder, bearing in mind that our focus is on positive emotion. So part of this paper is familiar because it's the system of meditation, and that is what is often presented as a vertical line because it is a vertical teaching. It's a long-standing teaching. And there, positive emotion is well-rooted in integration, in mindfulness, and then is a necessary basis for spiritual death, spiritual rebirth, and even beyond that for spontaneous, compassionate activity, no more effort. The ultimate expression of love. So that's the vertical. And then what this paper also gives us is the horizontal dimension. That all those elements are present on the day-to-day level of our practice, including spiritual receptivity. So positive emotion actually contains parts of all of these elements and is present in all of them. And overall, it's a presentation that shows how our spiritual practice is complex and subtle. And then, on the diagram that you did, you also had the overlay from revering and relying on the Dharma, sort of overlay, but actually very deep within it, of the Dharma Niyama reaching down and the Karma Niyama reaching up. So the Dharma Niyama, the transcendental reaching down to us, and the Karma Niyama, us putting in the positive work, reaching up, aspiration towards what is described as a glimpse of a life beyond self-clinging. And I think we also have the context of reimagining the Buddha, another paper. The Buddha is our vision of the transcendental, and the imagination as our longing, our faith, our aspiration, our creativity. So actually all of this is vast, all-embracing, all dimensions, all practices, and we're taking our time to absorb it all, to understand it more deeply, truly to make it our own. So in this talk, I really want to share some of my reflections. The topic of positive emotion is vast, to share some of the things which have touched me. So initiation into a new life is about a system of practice, but it's infused with vision. And I think what we have, whatever diagram we use to represent it, how we hold it in our minds, we have a map of how things are. We have a map of human experience, maybe a mandala of human experience. And it holds the mundane and the transcendental, samsara and nirvana. So it is feet on the ground, day to day, and it's longing, vision and love. And this is Paticcet Samuppada, conditioned co-production, the dynamics of existence just playing themselves out on every level. And I think, if you like, well, in a way it's our equivalent of Mount Meru and the four continents. And our map at the moment is rather less graphic, but probably rather more intelligible. So this is our map. And there's just so much that could be said. So I've just chosen some themes around positive emotion. And I don't want to keep using the phrase positive emotion, which is a bit clumsy as a phrase, really. So when I talk about metta, if I talk about love, I mean positive emotion. I'm also including the Brahma Viharas. So what interested me as I prepared this talk? Well, I became interested in the connection with insight. I became interested in the need for pliancy, for malleability in our practice, for loosening our boundaries. I became interested in positive emotion and the imagination. And I became interested in what all this means for us collectively as order members. And I, maintained my interest in the five jhanas. And a little glimpse of a glimpse of this coexistence of samsara and nirvana. And all of this is about the light and the dark of our lives. So I'll just start with one or two general points. Still using the phrase positive emotion. Well, there is a whole range, of course, of a positive emotion. The Brahma Viharas, our specific focus this weekend, but also faith, gratitude, fidelity, forgiveness, devotion, all those deeply human qualities where we look beyond the delusion of a fixed self. And we sense their presence within us, their potential within us. And we respond, looking up, reaching out, bowing down. And I visited Bhante recently, and he reminded me that compassion looks down, mudita looks across, and faith looks up. And I mean, in giving this talk, it's also been a deeper recognition for me that this is very much my working ground. It's quite sobering, actually, writing a talk on positive emotion. And I've had my moments, like working very hard on my talk in my room, getting interested in it, excited, going down to the kitchen to get a cup of tea and not wanting to talk to anyone. So it's an interesting process. And I want to start with the Buddha. The Buddha who was specifically honoured here only a few days ago and who taught all of this. So this is the Buddha, I think at Sarvati, speaking the Karaniya Metta Sutta. And we can imagine his feet on the ground, perhaps a motley crowd, maybe ranging from Brahmin to outcast. And we're very familiar with the sutta, so I'm not going to read it or go into it in detail, but what the Buddha says is radical. He's talking about loosening our conditioning. So he confirms that metta at its highest is unconditional. It's for all beings everywhere, weak or strong, large or small, and so on. It's for everyone, every being. And then it's unconditional in another way because it's about boundless love, like a mother's love for her child, but for everyone. So the love is boundless. We don't qualify our love, limit it with preferences, rationalizations, opt-out clauses. Metta is boundless love and for all beings. And as such, it can take us to insight, spiritual death and spiritual rebirth, take us to the experience of the unconditioned. So the final verse in one popular translation reads as follows. It is sublime, this. It escapes birth and death, losing lust and illusion and living in the truth. So this is the state free from suffering to which we aspire and that ideally we wish for everyone. And Bhante, in Living with Kindness, describes this state, and he says, the self is replaced by a creative orientation of being or a creative orientation of becoming. And this is a commentary by a younger Bhante, and I quoted earlier, based on the seminars in the 1980s. And the Buddha was speaking as the caste system was beginning to take shape in India, and his words were socially deeply challenging. He was speaking out, just as one could speak out at the rise of apartheid in South Africa, or at the rise of fascism in Nazi Germany. He was speaking out in a context where shared negative views and collective negativity was beginning to take shape. And he was speaking against that kind of selectivity, exclusion, persecution, the denial of another's humanity, denial of what someone truly is, and all the nastiness that can follow from that. So the Buddha's teachings are simultaneously radical and convey deepest human truths. Richard Gombrich, writing in How Buddhism Began, says, I do not see how one could exaggerate the importance of the Buddha's ethicization of the universe, which I regard as a turning point in the history of civilization. As part of my general points, I'd like to say something also about empathy. In reimagining the Buddha, empathy is one expression of the imagination, and it's described as the feeling of solidarity with all life, a direct recognition of the same life and the beings around one that one knows in oneself. This is essentially an imaginative act, and it's described as being like a background hum, a vibration. And metta is described as the active dimension of empathy. And empathy is ultimately the basis of compassion. And I think this looks forward to that quality of trembling with, which we hear about frequently in the Pali Canon. But empathy is also associated with Virochana in that paper. And it's interesting, I do think that metta is in some ways objective. So it's kind of out there as well as in here. So it's as if there's something out there above or beyond us. And Bhante writes, we can begin to form an idea of metta, not so much as a state of mind, but as a movement within consciousness, or a medium within which consciousness can move, or a medium within which consciousness can move. And in the initiation paper, it's described as a transpersonal force. So something written into the very nature of things. So I'd like to move on. I'd like to start by talking about meditation. the Metabhavana, the Brahma Viharas. And the Brahma Vihara practices cover the whole range of human experience. They cover ordinary life, its suffering and its joy, and they open up the subtlety and the breadth of the human response. Karuna, mudita, upeka. What abides in the human heart, or the potential within the human heart. And the Buddha gave us mudita as a spiritual practice. It's said not to appear in other spiritual traditions. And I won't say very much about upeka, because Ratnavanda, yesterday you described it and quoted about it so beautifully. But within that range of the Brahma Viharas, we do have upeka as positive emotion infused with insight, or some degree of insight. Seeing others, feeling for others, seeing others in the in terms of the playing out of conditionality. So to wish others well, we don't just say our good wishes, we don't just send beautiful cards, though all of this is good, but we meditate. We engage with the workings of our mind to bring about deep personal change. And we know that metta is primarily a volition, not an emotion. It is a reorientation of our being. And I know when I say this on retreat, it always has such a big effect on people. Nothing quite like it. And as if it's just a kind of huge relief that people can stop struggling to feel what immediately you don't feel, because metta is a volition. It's about skillful intention. It's about the space behind the precepts. And it can reshape our samskaras, our tendencies. And what fascinates me actually is we invite people into our meditative space. And there's an intimacy there. It takes us beyond the literal. It takes us to a deeper level of consciousness. There's intimacy and imagination. And we need to have a more open, pliant response. And I think however we work in the practices, whether it's phrases, images, a sense of presence, well, things are less literal. And we're going closer to the boundary between the conscious and the subconscious. And each approach draws on the imagination in quite subtle, maybe undramatic ways. And we're also becoming more objective because we're going beyond our normal preconceived views. So sometimes what can work for me is a sense of, well, seeing a bit more with the eye of the artist, seeing others in this way, moving more to that objectivity beyond self-interest, the rupa loka, allowing the selected people to stand free within their own humanity. So I can be inspired by Rembrandt, the light and the shadow in an old woman's face. And in our meditative space, we can imagine someone like this. Or Vermeer, individual women, ordinary everyday actions touched by light. Pouring milk from a jug, reading a letter, but a little illuminated. And in our own way, we can see people more like this and have that emotional resonance. And maybe it's just a woman filling a mug from an electric urn, or maybe it's a woman carrying a compost bucket through the kitchen door. Her ordinary life, but touched with light. And how would it feel to see her for the last time, or to be with her for the last time? So we're drawing closer to existential truths, to some kind of insight, seeing more truly, feeling more truly. And it could be a bit like the second level of wisdom, you know, reflective space within our heart. And so often we don't see, we don't notice. We're too wrapped up in our own world, the narrow, fixed spaces of our papancha, its fictions and fantasies, its familiar reactions and views, complaint, outrage, justification, anxiety. And it has its own language, often, which is cluttered and speedy, words not aligned with imaginative truth. And instead, we wish to cultivate a love that holds the light light and shade of another's life, and a love that lasts into the long shadows of the evening. And our sense of others, this meditative intimacy with others, is held in the body. I think it's held in the energy flow within the body, and in the energy that flows a bit beyond the body. So our boundaries are softer, more insubstantial. It's held in the more subtle body. And then also it can be held in the larger space of our awareness, the more formless space of our awareness. This is where we can meet others. But to hold this, we need pliancy of mind, a subtlety and a sensitivity. And even to hold with metta the resistance, the stiffness, the blockages that are also within us. So this brings me on to the quality of pliancy. In the Dhatu Vibhanga Sutta, the Buddha describes upeka as equanimity, purified and bright, malleable, wieldy and radiant. And pliancy is around those malleable, wieldy qualities. I think it's the antidote to fixity. So there's a tenderness, an open-heartedness, a responsiveness. And it's one aspect of what Subhuti calls a fit mind. And it's a truer response to how things are, because things are flow and connection, impermanent, insubstantial. And that's our experience. So that's some reflections around meditation, but then positive emotion is active. In meditation, we work on our mind to develop our skillful intention and to act from it and to begin to reshape our samskaras. So our positive emotion becomes the texture of the precepts. And we wish to move away from the false volitions of the ego and the voices that go with it, insidiously building up the bastion of the self. And one can see those volitions, well, say in the flow of the near and far enemies of the Brahma Viharas. Even just take the near enemies, the grooves of attachment, sentimental pity, vicarious enjoyment, neutrality. And we wish to be more positive than that and closer to the truth than that. And we are our actions of body, speech and mind, and this is all we are. So we wish them to be emotionally positive. And this momentum is all that will probably survive our death. So we need to be creating freer channels, flowing with the true and good. And even at the horizontal level, positive emotion includes elements of spiritual death and rebirth. It's less boundaried, it's more expansive. The sense of self is less central and diminished. And we have smaller experiences playing themselves out in our lives on the karmic level, which can still be very significant. The humiliation, the disappointments, the shame, the losses, the dark spaces where we realize that we can't fix life. But we do need to reflect deeply on such experiences. And we know, of course, that we need positive emotion at shamatha base to hold this. But also, I think we need the purification of positive emotion just to be with the truth of our experience, what is happening, to see it and feel it and hold its texture and let it reorientate our being. So we just don't want the muddle and the mess and the wasted energy, the narrowness of trying to make samsara work. And I have a favourite example of spiritual death and spiritual rebirth at the moment, which is here. And when we had the main shrine room repointed in the autumn, we had to cut down a clematis, very beautiful, huge clematis, which you probably remember. And we cut it down and it was these very bare stumps. And it was those very bare stumps for a long, long time and it looked dead. And then there was that wonderful moment when I went back into the retreat centre garden and I saw for the first time that it was flowering. And the stumps are still there, you can still see them, but something can grow out of that pruning, that harsh, untimely pruning, and it can be very positive and very beautiful. So I'd like to move on and say something about positive emotion in the collective context and in the context of the order. So in An Initiation into a New Life, Subhuti writes, once the individual goes for refuge effectively, positive emotion takes on a new dimension. Maitri becomes a matter of striving for self-transcendence, first seeing one's own self as equal with others, and then subordinating self to Maitri as a transpersonal force. One begins to cultivate bodhicitta. The practical consequence is that one increasingly feels oneself to be serving something that infinitely transcends oneself, often embodied in work to spread the Dharma. So this is our map as order members, and the vision is the pull of the Dharma Niyama. And the order is potentially the context for the arising of the bodhicitta, the force of goodness, love, within the world, within the nature of how things are. And the spiritual community, our spiritual community, is defined by positive emotion. Otherwise, it would just be a group. And even on a lower level, we wish to be a collective force for good in a world where there are many negative collective forces. And I think the order is also a crucible. It's an intense, effective working ground, which isn't always easy. But we have our shared practices around truth and kindness, going beyond fixed self in the collective. So chapter, confession, the 10 precepts, mind precepts, more subtle speech precepts, shame as a positive, a mental event. Shame is something very emotionally true. We witness each other. We rejoice in our merits. We transfer our merits. We do the order metta together. And our sadhana practice, whatever form it takes, is a collective reaching out, reaching up to the transcendental. And we share our devotional practice, as on this weekend around this shrine. We make offerings together. And Bhante writes in Living with Kindness, true devotion contains a strong element of insight, the direct knowledge that certain practices will lead to certain results. So as order members, we also are our actions. And I feel that responsibility, that my actions express myself as an order member. And they have an effect, they have consequences for the order and the wider Sangha. And for all of us, our context is also the wider Sangha, Kalyana Mitrata, formal and informal. And we all stand alongside each other. We can work alongside each other, live alongside each other. And for me, moving here to Taraloka, I have, quite late in my life, in a way, had a real glimpse of the full significance of the institutions of the movement. Deeply challenging and immensely rich. And I think here, and I think one might even have felt this during recent days and these days, one can have a glimpse that there's something more going on, that the creative flow is part of something larger. And it's a mystery, the flow of all our connections. We talk a lot about spiritual friendship, but in a way we don't really know what it is. We can call it vertical, and it can be defined, named, preceptor, Kalyana Mitra, but it's all wonderfully undefined. We're not fixed types, and we're not in fixed conventional relationships. We're not guru, not mother, not teacher, not counsellor. But in some way we're part of a creative flow, part of something greater. We don't fully know what these relationships are about, but the ego falls away at least a bit. And I think in all of this, what we can offer, it's the richness and the challenge again, what we can offer is constancy, is fidelity, that we don't turn away, or as much as we can, we try not to turn away. And we may be involved with very different personalities, and it may be over many years, but we don't turn away, and others haven't turned away from us. So I want to move on and speak rather more briefly really about that vertical dimension. The teaching's more familiar and the experience is probably less familiar. And a way we know positive emotion as a shamatha base so that we can hold the passionate experience. And in initiation into a new life, Subhuti writes, spiritual death means dying in the sense of loosening our illusions about ourselves and giving up our self-orientated clinging. So what we're losing is clinging to a sense of an unchanging fixed self. We see through those delusions. We're more open to self as a flow of experience in time and outwardly as well. And it reminds me on a much lower level of how the Buddha described his enlightenment. House builder, you have now been seen. You shall not build the house again. Your rafters have been broken down. Your ridgepole is demolished too. So we just don't want the boundaried, closed off existence. And the Buddha, of course, taught that positive emotion can take you to insight, to living in the truth, to boundlessness, expansiveness, freedom, all the walls knocked down or just transparent, because the space of love has become so large. And Bhante, writing in Living with Kindness, says, this is slightly abbreviated, it is in terms of insight, the expansive aspect of metta, its tendency to break through any sense of exclusivity is so important. To miss the point between metta and insight is to miss the point entirely. I'll repeat that last bit. To miss the point between metta and insight is to miss the point entirely. So at this level, we're talking about, and now moving on to talk about stream entry, the imagination has the pliancy, the flexibility, the emotional resonance to respond to the truth, to what is not fixed, impermanence and insubstantiality. And as such, the imagination holds the middle way between the fictional extremes of fixed self and no self, and the pliant has become boundless. And imagination then is the faculty of insight. Now illumined, it is the illumined imagination. And in some way, the experience of insight is held within the body. What is that like? And in some way, the experience of insight informs speech. What is that like? Maybe words truly kindly and gracious. Truly helpful and harmonious. And in Initiation into a New Life, spiritual rebirth is described as follows. One is reborn to the emerging flow of Dharma Niyama processes, leading ultimately to Buddhahood. So I thought I'd just end a bit closer to Buddhahood. I wanted to end with the five jhanas. Who are said to dwell in the infinite skies of the imagination, but also they're very much here, now, Taraloka, June 2012. Outwardly, they're here in the shrine tent, in the grounds outside, in our landscape. And these five figures, in their families, hold our idams, they hold our devotion, they hold our flow of offerings. We look up, they reach down, they never turn away. So we glimpse their wisdoms, and we glimpse their shimmering compassion, their luminous love, in the pure, translucent light of their different colours. Whether Amitabha's love for every tiny detail, with the Ratnasambhava's expansive love for all that's there. And of course, there are also the great ghosts, the Mahabhutas, what the elements truly are when they are transformed, what we experience as earth, water, fire, air, space, now held in ultimate reality. And these figures hold samsara and nirvana. And I like to think it's kind of all here. Makeshift shrines, slightly battered figures on the ground, on the earth, beside the water, lit by the dawn light, still sitting beneath the stars. And in some way, that suggests the mystery of samsara and nirvana, and one can't find the words for it. Even the map becomes insubstantial. So maybe we're just left with a glimpse of what positive emotion might be, a luminous love. Left with the Buddha, his feet on the ground, speaking to that motley crowd. Left with Bhante, the younger Bhante, saying, to miss the point between metta and insight is to miss the point entirely. And left with Bhante, the late Bhante, giving us the map, still our guide, saying, do this and everything else will follow.